Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Astros going with Zach Greinke tonight in Game 4. Is that the right move? We'll talk about it in 5 minutes. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Big C, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, what's going on, boys?
What's up, Clarence?
Joe, I would have to disagree with you on that one. I'm going with Jeremy on this one.
That's right.
It's the whole sequence and the play calling that's real funny. Okay, you're going to get the first down, and what are you going to do after that? Call a timeout and what?
Throw
it. Use one timeout to try to get to the end zone or just kick a field goal. You didn't have much time to do nothing else. So might as well just take the points. Go to overtime and see what you can do.
Clarence, and I know it's like blackjack, right? What does the book say? The book says you're on the road you need less than a yard, you have that timeout, and then you take one crack at it. You still have enough time if you don't get it on that the one crack, but you know what? You've got a high-powered offense with enough weapons, and he proved, whether it be the two-point conversion and the trickery or just waiting and either handing the ball off or with the plethora of receivers he's got that all made catches down in the red zone, that he had options, and you can still stop the clock one more time if you have to kick the field goal.
But it's a lot of ifs and buts and candies, and that's okay. What if they get the first down, stop the clock, and take a crack at the end zone?
Okay, but Clarence, like I said, what if they take the field goal and then Tennessee, they run out the rest of the clock? In overtime, if they win the toss, get the ball first, and they still can't stop Derrick Henry.
What if they don't get it on the quarterback sneak and they lose 34-31?
Shut up.
Appreciate the call, Big C. And I appreciate the side of the argument that you're on, too.
Oh, shut up again.
I think there is something to say about it being regular season and it being on the road and the Bills are still going to be the champions of the AFC East. Like, I wonder if that decision's made in the postseason. Probably not.
No, I don't think so.
And also, like, this also goes into my theory, which we're seeing more and more in the NFL. NFL head coaches are being aggressive to be aggressive. They're not being aggressive to be smart. They're being aggressive because it's the cool thing to do. Like, we're seeing more and more decisions by NFL head coaches going forward in spots where we would never see it before. And I understand there's a time and place for it. And I understand 5 years ago, like, it was too antiquated and the coaches weren't being aggressive enough. But now it's just a cool thing to do.
Well, it's also analytical, right?
But I think sometimes it's even against the analytics.
But more so than anything else, they you know, everything's a percentage, right? Everything's a percentage of what your offense brings to the table and the yards per carry that you get when you run the ball and what you do with your offense when you know, make quick throws or run this play or that play. And look, I lived analytics with Daryl Morey and his staff for way too many years. It all factors in. But you're right. The other factor that factors in is you want to keep audiences more engaged. How many times have we seen a team go for it in their own side of the football field? And it's not fourth and inches. It's fourth and four, fourth and six. And, you know, we also get those teams that
Brandon
have to
Staley
admit.
Did that for the Chargers on Sunday. Yeah. Went for it in his own territory.
But the other thing, and Green Bay's done it a few times that I've seen when I watch their games. But the thing is when you look at it, too, the other thing is you're given, it's like the Red Sox-Astros thing. Astros are spending so much time worrying about the Red Sox. They're not worrying about their own business. When you talk about the things that like that, going for it on fourth down, everybody's answer after the game is, well, we knew they were going to score like crazy. In order to stay in the game, we were going to have to score with them, so we had to go there. That means you're playing into their hands and trying to play to compete with what they're going to do instead of what about old school football? You know what? Ball control. We're going to run the clock. We're going to make sure you can't score all the points you want. We're going to do things to change what you're trying to do. Instead, you just play their game.
Yeah. Robert and Tomball texting in 713-780-ESPN. I like going for the win, but my bankroll didn't. I feel you, Robert and Tomball. Zach Greinke's the game four starter for the Astros. This was something we found out yesterday. Now, there was some discussion, and Dusty Baker admitted to this, that there was a possibility that Framber Valdez could go in game four on what was, Dusty Baker called it half rest, not short rest, because he only threw 68 pitches or whatever it was in game one. They decide to go with Zach Greinke. Is this the right move, or should they have went with Framber?
You know what? I think it's a smart move for me because, like I said, I've seen enough of the young kids that I already am worried, regardless of what kind of stuff they're going to bring to the table, that from a mental aspect, I don't think that they understand the hyper-focus you got to have on every pitch. I don't think they understand the difference between pitching and throwing. And no matter how good your stuff is, you got to think through every hitter, every pitch, every at-bat in order to be effective. And Zach Greinke does. And I think that whether we've seen starts from Zach Greinke over the last couple of years as an Astro where he's had his best stuff and where he hasn't had his best stuff. But you know what he's done? He's competed in every at-bat, every pitch, and he hasn't had balloon innings where he's just gotten pounded over and over again. And if he does, it's more likely to be I mean, look, he doesn't have the fastball he once had. He's going to be susceptible if he does miss a pitch. If he leaves it up in the zone, there's more likelihood it's going to get pounded. But I think that more so than that, he has the confidence in every pitch to know I'll pitch any one of my pitches, no matter what the count is, and I feel like I'm going to locate it. And if I miss, I'm going to miss in a spot that's not going to blow my doors off. Where the young kids are just trying to nitpick. And then when they get behind, they're like, well, screw it. I got to throw 3-0 right down the middle of the plate, no matter what time of the year it is. Chances are pretty good. Percentages and analytics say that's going to get hit pretty hard if the batter decides to swing.
713-780-3776 is Zach Greinke in game four. The right call for Dusty Baker and the Astros. 8437 on the text line saying, no gimme walks, no gut balls. That's all I'm asking.
And I think that's what I'm saying.
It's a fair Greinke, point.
That's what Greinke's going to do. He's not going to give away free walks. He's not going to give up on counts and batters. He's not going to give in if the umpire isn't giving him strikes. And that's going to be half the battle tonight is you've got a battle-tested, intelligent pitcher on the mound.
Zach Greinke meeting with the media yesterday ahead of his game four start tonight.
We'll see. I mean, haven't gone real deep recently, but we'll just see what happens. And we'll be ready, and we'll go from there. It's a tough team we're facing, swinging good, and I mean, just try to make pitches. That's whole career has been based around just trying to make pitches, and that's all you could do. And they got a pretty tough lineup over there, and the better pitches you make, the better chances you have. More mistakes you make, the worse your success will probably be.
There you go.
There's your
intelligent
analytics.
Thoughts there from Zach Greinke. The better you pitch, the better you'll do. The worse you pitch, the worse
you'll
do.
There's the billboard material and your analytics all in one fall swoop.
Why were you snoring there with Greinke?
Anybody expecting anything other than that?
That was
Zach
riveting.
Greinke?
That was riveting.
I mean,
from
you
Greinke.
Could fall asleep. I mean, instead of using a fan or a noise machine to fall asleep, just listening to Zach Greinke sound bites, you're like, oh.
5554 saying, is this a grown man or a middle schooler? That's Zach Greinke. Zach Greinke, the guy that's supposed to change the tide in this series.
No, but the thing is,
for the Houston
is that
Astros.
He hates speaking.
He's socially, I mean, he's got social
he's an
disorder.
Exactly. But he's an extremely intelligent guy. That's what I'm basing all of my facts on and my theories on for why I believe in Zach Greinke tonight. Because as an he's right. He understands what he needs to do, but there's so much more to it. When he pitches, he studies the film on every hitter. He knows where to pitch and not to pitch to every guy. And with him and Maldi, I feel real good about them.
I could listen to Zach Greinke, like, read a dissertation. I love listening to him speak. And now, I think it is the right call with Zach Greinke going in game four, by the way. I don't like the idea of pitchers on short rest. I don't like the idea of pitchers who are pitching poorly on short rest as well for Framber. And I know the series is 2-1, and today feels like a must win. And you can make the case that it is a huge game for the Astros. I'm kind of like Polillo in this sense. Like, it's not a must win until it is a must win. But you need to get this win in Boston today to even the series. But you also need to win four games. So, like, the map to four wins, I feel, is better with Framber going tomorrow, Zach Greinke going today. You need Greinke to just keep you in this game and hope the offense comes to play at Fenway today to get the victory. 713-780-3776. Greinke in game four, the right move. Brandon T saying, yep, absolutely the right move. He has the experience. It's pitched in big-time games. Greinke shows up today. 8769. Greinke absolutely gives you the best chance to win. 7749. Right move to go with Greinke. Let's hope Fromber has a bounce back tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, look, the thing is that you've experimented with the young pitchers, and what bothers me is, like we talked about earlier, I'm just concerned about their first experience in playoff baseball on the road, hostile environments, different temperatures. It changes things in terms of what guys have done in the past, especially just last year, as opposed to Fenway Park with 53-degree temperatures to start the night, with a hostile, raucous environment in which you truly have to be on point and focused. I don't think some of the younger guys have done that. That's why, just another reason why I believe that you put a veteran on the hill that's been there, done that, I feel better about it.
Yeah, I think Greinke's not going to get rattled in the moment. At least I hope so, and I hope this is a 2-2 series when we talk to you tomorrow. Elsewhere, Major League Baseball, the Yankees announced that they're bringing back Aaron Boone. They give him a new 3-year deal. They also had, like, their, I guess, end of season meeting with the press. And Brian Cashman was asked about the shortstop spot. And Cashman's quote, "The bottom line is shortstop is an area of need, and it's going to be. We have to address it."
Well, 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 Jeremy, what have we been saying all along? That the Yankees were going to be players in the shortstop market. And more so, I've been saying, the Yankees are going to look hard at Carlos Correa and make a run for him. And others have said, nope, they don't need a shortstop. Nope, they don't have enough money. Nope, they're not going to do it. And if they do, they're going to Trevor Story. We'll see.
Yep. So we'll see what the Yankees decide to do in the offseason. But definitely in the market for a shortstop. They said Glaber's better suited for second base. I feel like I heard that debate somewhere else before. The other New York team over there in the Queens, the Mets interested in Jeff Luhnow. This is just speculation from Joel Sherman of the New York Post. This isn't something actually involved with the team. This is just Sherman of the New York Post speculating this. But I've said this all along. If the Mets really are interested in winning and they care about winning, the hire they should make for their GM spot should be Jeff Luhnow.
I don't disagree with you.
I think he was outstanding with the Astros. He turned the Astros into perennial 100-game losers. Nobody was watching them on TV, and all of a sudden they were winning a World Series in a reasonable amount of time.
He knows the game of baseball. If you're going to give Alex Cora a second chance, if you're going to give A.J. Hinch a second chance, then you know what? Jeff Luhnow deserves a second chance. Because for all everybody can point the finger and say, well, he let J.D. Martinez walk and he wouldn't give him one more year.
That was a bad move.
Yeah, and he admits that.
But everybody makes
bad
moves.
But you know what? That's what he's going to say. Yeah. But for every bad move he's made, look at the great moves that he made that turned out to be difference makers for this team, and go up and down the list and say, you know what? Ideally, he'd still be your general manager, and you'd be just fine as an Astros fan, because you know when it was time to go for it, he wasn't afraid. You knew that the guys he was looking at were guys that had talent. He had a system. He had implemented analytics. And as much as everything can be said about pointing a finger once it's all said and done with the cheating scandal, dude did a whole lot of good here, and he deserves a second chance somewhere else.
713-780-3776. Go out to the HRMP listener line. Oh, she just hung up. If you want to call back, you can. 713-780-3776. Number to get in. Do you feel Greinke in Game 4 is the right move for the Houston Astros? Trailing in the series, 2-1. Greinke hasn't pitched, hasn't started a game in a month, by the way. We'll see what he brings
to
the table for the Astros.
What, 4 innings the other night?
No.
Or what did he give you in the White Sox series?
He went one inning.
In Chicago?
Yes, he went one inning. He threw 21 pitches.
Why do I feel like he went longer than that?
He went one inning, 21 pitches in his only playoff appearance this season. Okay, he went 2 1/3 against Oakland in the bullpen assignment there. So that's probably what you're thinking.
That's probably what I was thinking of. But I know that I still believe that, as much as we've been talking about this over and over again, I believe that his bullpen sessions and what he's been doing in the meantime hasn't just been sitting on his thumbs.
Oh, his life into something else.
Oh, I believe he stretched out. Not completely like he was.
I'm going 3 innings, 1 run, and I'd be over the moon.
I'm hoping for 5.
We'll see. I wonder what the over-under. We're going to look at that up. We're going to look that up during the break. 713-780-3776. Willing and dealing for Nick Caserio has been something he's been doing this week, and we expect him to be doing it through November 2nd. Maybe a couple of trade ideas that he could make for the Texans before that November 2nd trade deadline. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Fitz Roofing. Look, Corey is a guy that knows what he's doing. From running the company but to being the vice president of the Houston Roofers Association, people look at Corey as a guy that knows everything about what to do with your roof, whether it be for your business or your house, a repair or a whole new roof. A commercial project is just as easy for them as a house, and they take care of you every step of the way. They have the best customer service. They use the best products, starting with CertainTeed Shingles. They're a CertainTeed Select Shingle Master Company. Only a select percentage, less than 10% of the roofers in the United States, have the ability to say that. They're a select shingle master company. That's what Fitz Roofing is. They have the best warranties in the business, the best ratings in the business. Again, you keep hearing all these things, and the bottom line is, why would you go anywhere else? Go to FITZroofing.com and see all the ways they can help you, from all the roofing projects to any kind of home repairs to a fence in your backyard. They can handle it and handle it better than anybody else. And on top of all that, if you want a free no-obligation inspection for something you've been dealing with, you don't want to pay to have an estimate done and someone come to your house. You don't have to. Just call them up on the phone, 832-521-3001. They're going to come to you and show you what they can do and then go back on the rest of their day. You want them to come back, you make the appointment before, during, and after the sale. Their customer service and the ability to get the job done, it's like nobody else. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. They're the unbelievable people at Fitz Roofing, FITZroofing.com. Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, we're expecting Nick Caserio to be a willing-dealing son of a gun, right, before the November 2nd trade deadline. Heck, he was a willing-dealing son of a gun this past week. He released Whitney Mercilus, couldn't find a trade partner for him, obviously. I think that's why they leaked the news yesterday, trying to see if anybody would trade for him. Nobody around the league wanted to trade for him. So then they issued the statement from Cal McNair saying he's one of the most popular Texans of all time. And then also cutting and releasing Andre Roberts, who, that was a failure.
That didn't bother you at all.
Man. Two-year contract for, it's not even the worst moves that Caserio's made, though, right?
Right.
Like, it's up there, another loss. Two-year contract, you're getting rid of him of the way into the season.
Whitney find a home somewhere else, you think?
I think so. I think he's with a team.
Who needs,
by the end of next week.
I was going to say, who needs edge rushing, but then you don't need Whitney. I'm just trying to think of, like.
What about Kansas City?
Maybe.
They're desperate for defense. He's only going to play on third downs anyways on a rushing the quarterback situation.
He's not an inside guy, because I was thinking about Green Bay as bad. People are hammering Green Bay for getting Jalen Smith. Jalen Smith can play inside, though. He's better suited for running around the field, wreaking havoc. But that's why they don't need a Whitney Mercilus.
It needs to be a 3-4 defense, too. Like the 4-3, hand in the dirt, that's not Whitney's wheelhouse.
We could ask Howard Balzer, and it was just COVID with Jones. But if the Cardinals had any kind of issues, JJ could say, hey, I've played with this guy, I know what he brings to the table, and yet another Texan ends up in Arizona with a team having a successful season. We are going to get to that at some point. Over under this week, I really believe D-Hop's going to go for at least two touchdowns.
Two touchdowns?
Yeah.
I wonder, we'll have to look up the player props. I mean, it's a David Johnson revenge game, though.
You keep saying that, and I'll keep telling you D-Hop's good for at least a hundo and two tees.
So how many trades do you think Nick Caserio makes before November 2nd?
God, I hope they don't affect any more draft picks.
I don't think there'd be trades like that.
I hope it's nothing but getting rid of veterans and getting back younger players. I'll say two.
That seems light. I feel like I'm going to go over
that. Well, I'm not saying it's going to be for a lack of trying.
That's the thing, is they don't have tons of talent.
Right.
They don't have tons of talent. Bleacher Report put together an article on five trades that make sense before the November 2nd trade deadline. Mm-hmm. And the name that we even brought this up yesterday, Justin Reed to the Kansas City Chiefs. Justin Reed, final year of his deal, has been a productive player for the Texans. He's probably their best defensive player now since they kind of ruined Zach Cunningham. And the trade mentioned here is a second rounder for Justin Reed. I would jump at that immediately. I don't think that's realistic. I don't think a second rounder for Reed's realistic, especially the last year of his deal. Now, he has played with Tyrann Mathieu. Matthew can vouch for Justin Reed.
You still win the trade no matter what Reed does the rest of his career. Like Cody said yesterday, he's going to leave anyway. You drafted him in the third round. You get a second round. That's like a Patriots move.
But I don't think it's realistic. So what if I pose a third rounder for Justin Reed? You still doing it?
Still done. Because like we talked about, by the time the rest of the team catches up to whatever he has in and wherever he is in his career, they don't balance. They're not going to be at the same time. And by the time you're good, he won't be anyway. So just get whatever you can for him.
Yeah, so I would do it for a third rounder as well. I think you need as many draft picks as you can have, although that does not seem to be the Nick Caserio philosophy.
Plus, is he a guy you're going to throw a lot of money at in the offseason?
Justin Reed? Yeah, I wouldn't.
I wouldn't either.
I wouldn't, although they're going to have plenty of money because, everybody's on these short, cheap, veteran type of deals. The next trade that they suggested for the Texans actually involves kind of absorbing a big contract. Jimmy Garoppolo to the Texans, and this was something that was reported. I forget who reported it. Before the start of the season, that the Texans would be interested at the point San Francisco is willing to trade Jimmy Garoppolo. I wouldn't trade Jimmy Garoppolo if I'm San Francisco, first off, because I'm not really I'm not 100% sold on Trey Lance yet. I think he's going to be fine. But in terms of this season, they still have aspirations to be a playoff team. Does Jimmy G give you a better chance to win this season more than Trey Lance? See, that's debatable. It's in the conversation.
I think the injuries, Jeremy, have already put the Niners in the position of we're not going to try and win this year.
Really?
Yeah, I think that and because of the fact they look at their division and it looks like it's not going to be the way they thought it might have been at the start of the year. That's why I think that at a certain point, they say, you know, look, they lost all their running backs for the most part. They've been dinged up all over the place. Now Garoppolo's even hurt.
But with all that, they're a half game back of the wild card spot.
Yeah, but I mean, do you really think that with the Niners even healthy with Jimmy Garoppolo, with all the teams and the way they're playing in the NFC, you think they got a shot?
To win it, no. To get into the playoffs, yes.
But I think that their goal is to win it.
Yeah, that'd be interesting if they just
but I don't understand
dismiss the idea of making the playoffs.
And Dell, this is your team. But I really believe that for the Texans to be interested in Jimmy Garoppolo but say they wouldn't be interested in Tua makes no sense to me. I watched Tua play that game last weekend, and you and I talked about this. I think he's got potential. I think he looked okay.
Tua?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like what I saw from Tua as well.
Yeah, I don't really understand the Tua thing as far as people being out on the dude for after 12 starts now, is it? I mean, they've jumped to a decision, and meanwhile, people feel really good about Mac Jones. And Mac Jones, you look at the numbers, as far as their first five starts are concerned, Tua wins, or it's very, very close. But everyone has this positive thing about Mac Jones for whatever reason. I don't really understand
it. Take it to where I was going, too, is you know what you got from Jimmy Garoppolo, too, and you've already seen the ceiling because you get to the Super Bowl, it's not his thing. He's a game manager at best.
Ceiling is the roof. I have no interest in Jimmy Garoppolo.
I don't
whatsoever.
Either.
I mean, he's a guy. Well, he's going to be 30 pretty soon, right? Like, he's not a young quarterback. You're not building your franchise around Jimmy Garoppolo. The Texans really aren't going to be in any sort of cap hell or anything like that, so they can absorb a contract like that. But I mean, he's not a franchise quarterback. Why would you trade for a 30-year-old quarterback who's kind of mediocre with a big contract that you're not planning on building around?
Who's always hurt?
Always hurt, and you would have to trade something. Like, you probably have to give it mid-round pick. Maybe a couple of rounds better than what you traded for Ryan Finley, but it just doesn't make sense.
You just guaranteed me that we weren't be giving away any picks. We'd be getting picks, so I can't be in on that deal.
No.
I'm not giving picks away for a Jimmy Garoppolo.
No. I mean, I think that he probably, like, this suggests moving him for a third-round pick. Like, no, I wouldn't trade any pick. Like, you'd have to give me a pick to absorb that contract. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's the only way you do it if you're the Texans.
I'm even thinking about, like, around the league, is Jimmy Garoppolo the kind of guy that the only reason why a team trades for him is your stud quarterback gets hurt,
yep,
and you don't have a backup. Like, say, Seattle, but they're in the same division. But when Russ goes down and you know Russ is going to be down a month or more, and you know how tight that division is, and you know you're trying to win now, then you may consider a move for a veteran like Jimmy Garoppolo. And like I said, it's never going to happen, not in the same division, but I'm just using it as the example of that's the only team that even sniffs Jimmy Garoppolo and goes, you know what, that's a guy we might want to add this year.
Yeah, a guy that can be serviceable for about a month, maybe go 2-2 in the four games that he plays and keeps you in the playoff hunt. I have zero interest in Jimmy Garoppolo.
He's a really expensive Teddy Bridgewater, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a good way to describe it. One player that I'll be fascinated to see what happens with before November 2nd is Zach Cunningham. I think the Texans have... Is ruined too strong a word? I don't know. I feel like Nick Caserio should have had the foresight. Damage, I think that's the best way to put it. Nick Caserio should have had the foresight that Zach Cunningham was not going to be a good 4-3 linebacker and traded him when his value was high in the offseason. Like, he's perfectly suited to being a 3-4 linebacker. He's good in that role. He led the NFL in tackles last season, so he can produce in a 3-4 defense. Like, to not have the foresight to trade him during the offseason when you knew, well, you should have known, if you didn't know, you should have known, that he wasn't going to produce in the 4-3, and he's going to play outside linebacker, too, instead of the middle spot in the 4-3 defense. Like, it bothers me. And now you're going to trade a guy, basically for pennies on the dollar, because he's not a scheme fit, who is a productive player in the right scheme in this league.
Yeah, no, and I think he has value. You're not going to get it, like you said, in return. You've used him completely the wrong way. But there are scouts that looked at him through the years or scouted him in college or watched him when they were watching film, getting ready to play against this team in the past, that'll say, you know what, there's still talent there. And if we can get him for pennies on the dollar, he's probably better suited for us than them, and we might be looking to catch a bargain. So they might be sniffing the Texans up and saying, you know what, I'd like to see what I can get. Want to give us him, and we'll give you a sixth-round pick.
Yeah,
we'll make up for one of those dumb moves you made with some of your other trades. And Nick might be, you know, conducive to doing that deal, going, yeah, maybe then people won't be so critical of the dumb moves I made in the past. I'm telling you, the guy that's going to go, the one move that they are going to make is Brandon Cooks.
I think that's, you could probably get a second rounder for him.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd
like to get a one, you won't, but you can get at least a two for him, and that's good enough. Because, again, no matter if it's Davis Mills or Tyrod, whoever it is, he's not worth enough to you. And he's not worth as much to you as he is worth on the open market what you get for him.
Hip Hop Anonymous, who I think is Nick Casario's burner, he's saying that was his value ever high in talking about Zach Cunningham? And it's higher in the offseason than it is now. I mean, he has diminished his value by playing for the Houston Texans in a 4-3 this season. Was it like you're not getting a second rounder in the offseason, but probably a middle rounder, a third or a fourth, and now you've diminished his value. You'd be lucky to get a sixth, like you said. When we return, Howard Balzer, NFL Hall of Fame voter, will join us next to talk about the goings around the league. And he's an Arizona guy, too. And it is the David Johnson Revenge Week, so we'll talk to him about that. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Joined now by Howard Balzer, joining us on the HRMP guest line, Hall of Fame voter, writes for SI, stationed in Arizona. Howard Balzer, how are we feeling? What is Arizona saying? What is the fear in this David Johnson revenge game that the Cardinals are about to see?
I haven't heard too many people talk about it yet. maybe they will by the end of the week, but I don't know.
I doubt it.
With everything that went on last week with the game against the Browns and all the crazy COVID stuff swirling around it without a head coach and all those things, I think people here with an undefeated team are sitting there kind of almost in shock of where this team is and what they were able to overcome last week. And, of course, there's been a little more talk about DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt, of course, playing against their former team.
That's where I was going, Howard. I've been telling Jeremy all week, I don't think anything short of two touchdowns and 100 yards receiving for DeAndre Hopkins, because much like the opposite, J.J. left. He left, basically got to dictate his own terms, and you know has nothing but shining things to say about the organization, which I think was the handshake deal and not being traded. But I think from the other standpoint, DeAndre's got plenty of things that messages that he wants to send. He did it consistently on Twitter since he's been gone. A lot of it obviously directed at Bill O'Brien, but I think this is the game where, even from a Cardinals standpoint, if there's a chance to score and it's between running the ball or throwing to somebody else or getting a D-hop, D-hop's getting his two this week, I believe.
You would think so. And, of course, you don't want to veer too much from the game plan and how things develop just to force the ball to him. But most of the time, you don't have to force the ball to him. But one thing about this team, though, on offense this season is that last year was pretty much DeAndre Hopkins and nobody else in terms of the passing game. This year, they've added A.J. Green, which has enabled Christian Kirk to go into the slot where he's better. They drafted Rondale Moore. I don't know if he'll have an impact in this game. It's hard to imagine he would, but they just traded for Zach Ertz after having their starting tight end Max Williams lost for the season in week five. So they have so many different weapons on offense, and Kyler Murray in his third year has been so good at spreading it around to all of them that I'm sure he's looking at this. Yeah, okay, Hop. Okay, we'll get the ball to you, but I'm still going to be looking for everybody else also, because the most important thing is winning the football game.
What is the status of Cliff? Will he be able to coach on Sunday?
Well, we don't know. I mean, he's in the same protocol as all players. When a vaccinated player tests positive or a coach, is they, A, have to be asymptomatic. We believe that he is asymptomatic. And then, though, you have to have the two negative tests 24 hours apart. That would seem that everyone would think, okay, well, if you don't have symptoms, you should get that negative test. Well, that's not necessarily the case all the time. And so the Cardinals did have a tight end, Darrell Daniels, a backup tight end from the week before last, who went on the list, and he was back in 6 days. So certainly that's what they're hoping with Kingsbury, but even 6 days would make it either Wednesday or Thursday. He's certainly going to be involved in the game plan virtually and all those things, but it's just unknown right now if he will be back in time to actually coach during the game.
Howard Balzer joining us on the HRMP guest line, Hall of Fame voter. I saw this from Albert Breer of the Monday Morning Quarterback, that he said that Cliff Kingsbury didn't even watch Arizona play live on Sunday. Instead, he was watching the Texans and devising a game plan for the Texans. Truth to that?
Well, I'm sure that's what he must have told Albert, and so I don't know why he would make that up. And then he did also add to that that when there was about 3 minutes left in the game, he then turned it on because and he was following the progress of it on his phone, he said. And so he turned it on at the end because he wanted to watch the team celebrate because he was so glad for them. But, yeah, I guess that was the case. He decided to use his time a little bit better. And who knows, maybe it's probably from that standpoint to be in that position, it's probably much more nerve-wracking to actually watch on a down-by-down situation. So that's what he said. So I guess we have to believe it.
Howard, I mean, to me, I'm thinking about that going, he's so engaged in calling plays.
Yes.
That no matter who was actually calling them, I was thinking about them jerry-rigging some kind of cell phone line and doing something so that he could still have his hand in the cookie jar. And you're telling me that he said he didn't even hardly watch the game. I have a hard time believing that because I would believe the opposite.
Well, you know, who knows how many times he might have been sitting there going, well, I second-guess that. I don't know if I would have made that call. So, and he had the crazy thing is, in fact, we just had a little session with a guy that no one had ever heard of, Spencer Whipple, who this is the first time I ever saw him talk. And ever
squeezed
actually,
the Charmin?
Right. But I'll tell you, all of a sudden I'm saying, you know what, he's 32 years old. This is probably going to be the next guy that becomes the next Sean McVay. That's what people are going to start talking about him because he was the assistant receivers coach, and he got tabbed by Kingsbury to be the guy that would not only relay the plays to Kyler Murray, but also made the calls in the passing game. Sean Coogler, the run game coordinator and the offensive line coach, he would make the calls in the run, but Whipple was the one who was making the passing game calls. But it's interesting you talk about Cliff because, of course, the whole game plan was in when this happened on Friday. And Cliff just said, okay, here's the way we're going to do this. And then they had an agreement pretty much between Whipple and Coogler, and they called it WWKC. If it came to one of those situations where, well, what do we do here? Do we run or do we pass? And they said, well, WWKC, what would Cliff call? And these guys are so in tune with the offense that they pretty much know his mindset. And Kyler Murray, you know, audibled out and did a lot of checks with different plays. And so it certainly seemed to go seamless. I mean, I have to admit, I was pretty shocked. I thought they would still play hard and play well. But losing Chandler Jones, losing two guys on the defensive line, including one Sunday morning, they had a call. They traveled. Here's one of the interesting side stories, guys, is that Kenny Bell is the assistant to the head coach. You know, all head coaches have these guys who help with administrative things and this and that. He suggested when Zach Allen, a defensive lineman, tested positive on Friday, where they found out on Friday, he suggested that they travel one of their practice squad defensive linemen just in case they had another positive test. And that's what happened. Sunday morning, they found out about their starting nose tackle, Corey Peters. Vance Joseph, defensive coordinator, found out about the test. Find out about Peters on the way to the stadium on the bus, and he quickly called this Jonathan Ledbetter, who was the practice squad guy who traveled, and he said, "Hey, John, when you get here, you're getting dressed. You're playing because we had a positive test." So it was pretty wild. A lot of the things that happened, and so especially losing three defensive guys, and they went. So I was like I said, I was starting to say I was shocked that I thought they'd play hard and still play well against Cleveland. But to win the way they did, 37-14, with missing guys on defense and the whole different thing on offense, I thought was pretty phenomenal the way that all played out.
Any reason to think this is a trap game, Howard? Because coming off that big win, knowing they got Green Bay staring them in the face in 2 weeks, the Texans don't look like they're going to put up any kind of a fight. You saw what they did against Buffalo. You've seen the fact what they did last week. They haven't looked good. They're definitely not consistent. And where the Cardinals are good, the Texans are bad, especially in their secondary with what you were talking about with the passing game and the fact that their offensive line is tattered and the Cardinals can put pressure on. Do you see any way that this is a trap game, or do the Cardinals just steamroll Houston?
I don't know if they'll steamroll them. I mean, this is the same question everybody asked after the Cardinals played Jacksonville, which I'm fairly certain was trying. No, that was before the Rams, I think. But whatever, everyone says, "Oh, is this a trap game?" Because it's the Jaguars, and they haven't won, and they all say the right things. And well, no, we just know what we have to work and how we have to do to go 1-0. But they were behind Jacksonville at one point in that game, 19-10. In the second half. Now, that game was on the road, but they were still behind. So you just never know how a team is going to react. And you mentioned Green Bay. It's They play the Packers on Thursday, so it's a quick turnaround on top of everything. But the one thing that I've seen with this team, and they talk about it, but you can sense it, is that with guys like J.J. Watt, adding A.J. Green, Rodney Hudson, who's not playing, but he's still a leader, they have a lot of guys that they will try, and Buda Baker, they preach that mantra of, hey, no such thing as a trap game. You just got to go out there and you have to play hard. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard. I mean, I think I saw yesterday the Cardinals were 17.5-point favorites. So that's an awful lot of points, and we know how the NFL can be at times. But coming off this game, the way they played, it's hard to believe there'd be a letdown. But, hey, you never know. They haven't played great at home. That's been the interesting thing. They had a one-point win over Minnesota, which they easily could have lost when the Vikings kicker missed a 37-yard field goal as time expired. And then against the 49ers, the offense, good defense, but the offense was a little bit off, and they only won 17-10. So they've been great on the road. Four games on the road, they've outscored their opponents 143-66. But at home, it's been a little different. And, you know, I think sometimes, you know, road teams have done really well in the league. I think sometimes at home, you want it to play so well for the home, you know, for the fans and all that, that maybe sometimes you get a little bit out of sorts. So it could be. I mean, it's hard to imagine it will be with everything that's going on with the Texans, but hey, you just can't be that, because you know anything can happen in the NFL.
Well, don't worry, the Texans have been bad everywhere. What have you seen in the progression of Kyler Murray, though? He's somebody that a lot of Texans have their eyes on, being from Texas.
Right. Well, I think that there's a combination of things, as there always are, but A, third year in the system, really comfortable with it, and has that sense now of going he has that patience to go through his progressions. He hasn't been running as much. We know that that danger is always there. But the one thing he's been able to do is when he's been throwing more when he's scrambling. And when he has to get away, that he's then able to still keep his eyes downfield and find open guys. But the other part of it is what I said earlier. There's more open guys because they are just better on offense now with better talent in addition to DeAndre Hopkins. And it's almost sacrilege to say this in Arizona and Phoenix, but you know, all offseason there was all the discussion, is Larry Fitzgerald coming back? Is he going to retire? Is he coming back? And that was the talk. And all through training camp, that was the talk. But I don't think there's any doubt that this team, with the receiving room that they have now, there'd be no fit for Larry Fitzgerald. And if he was here, I don't know if this team would be as good on offense, because they'd be figuring out who's not going to play if Fitzgerald's out there, because every single guy has been, you know, has been producing and being a part of it. And a lot of that is Kyler Murray being confident and getting the ball to all these different guys when he scrambles or just thrown from the pocket.
Howard, he's an insurance policy at best, right? He's in your own backyard. If someone gets hurt, you can him and he could get ready in a couple of weeks. But other than that, like you said, they've got a rhythm with the guys they have, and they've got a lot of talent. If I'm a Texans fan watching this game and watching this team, what's the one shortcoming or area in which the Cardinals could improve that the Texans could possibly take advantage of to where that they could get something done?
It's a great question, because it's interesting, because I made this observation a couple of weeks ago when I looked at this team and saw that at every position there's really standout player, or at least one standout player. Now, with Kyler Murray on the offensive line, on the defensive line with J.J. Watt, and getting good team play. Not if Chandler Jones isn't back in time, they have other guys. Marcus Golden really played well last week. The one area I would have said would have been cornerback, which was a big question going into training camp, seemed to be even a bigger question when Malcolm Butler suddenly retired in the week of the cut to 53 players. But guys have stepped up, like Byron Murphy Jr. making plays. Marco Wilson, a fourth-round pick, has played very well at cornerback. Robert Alford, who missed the last two seasons with injury, and all anybody was saying is, well, will he be healthy? Because he got injured one time early in camp and one time late in camp. He's been healthy and played well. He had an interception against the Browns on Sunday. So that would have been the one area of weakness that I might have mentioned, but that group is playing really well. So this is a team right now that doesn't have a whole lot of weakness. A little bit of weak, maybe in the running game. They get out of their gaps from now and then. But they still overall they've kept most of the teams they've played under 20 points, and teams have averaged under that. So I'm not sure how the Texans would be equipped to capitalize on that one potential weakness that the Cardinals might have.
Howard, great stuff as always. Let us know if these former Texans say anything bad about the current Houston Texans.
I will do that. I would think they'll probably be on their best behavior.
Beer but Davis I'll, Mills, I'll, Howard. Beer I'll, Davis Mills.
David Johnson revenge game. Great stuff as always. Look forward to catching up next week.
Look forward to it. Take care.
Howard Balzer, NFL Insider, NFL Hall of Fame voter. When we come back, let's take a look at Game 4 of the ALCS tonight. But first, I got to tell you about homecoming. Whose house? Cougs' house. Come hang out with us this Saturday, 3 o'clock, as the scarlet hot Houston Cougars, 5-1, winners of 5 straight, host the East Carolina Pirates for homecoming week at TDECU Stadium. Cougars offense and Clayton Tune been heating up while that third ward defense, one of the best in the country. Nothing beats the fun and pageantry of college football, so come early. Join in on the fun. Bring the kiddos, too. They can hang out in that new expanded kid zone just outside of the stadium. It's awesome. Case Keenan will be attendance. The Browns playing Thursday. He's coming to Houston to spend homecoming at TDECU Stadium as the 2011 football team will be recognized during the game. You get the performance by the Spirit of Houston band, DJ Mee, doing his thing in the student section. You have cheerleaders, Cougar Dolls, Shasta, and Sasha. It's well worth the price of admission. And, of course, it's homecoming. So the presentation of the homecoming court and the crowning of the king and queen. Tickets only $20. Head on over to uhcougars.com/tickets. That's uhcougars.com/tickets. Or call the U of H box office right now at 713-GO-COUGS and get your tickets today. Go Cougs!
Get low when the whistle goes.
Real fun. ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Brad Kellner hanging out with us, too, for the final few minutes of the show, or at least part of the final few minutes of the show. He'll be with the Wheelhouse with the other schmucks. Just kidding. Cody Stute, Jake Asman, 3-7 right here on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. I play favorites. There's no doubt about it.
As well, you should.
I just won't tell you who my favorite is.
Well, I'm not going to hold anything back since they've decided to blow our names out of their hot pie holes in some of their shows. Not you, BK. But did any one of the guys that you work with put any kind of tweets out last night that may have caught your attention a little bit?
I don't know. Did I miss something?
I think you might want to go back into a certain individual or two's timeline.
Who said the series is over?
Is over.
Yeah, he actually said on the air yesterday, if the Stros lose game 3, they are done.
Who panics? Yeah.
Cody Stutes calling last night's game a must win, and because the Astros did not win, he thinks this thing is done.
Do you think it's done, BK?
No, I don't.
They win tonight, we're fine.
Right. They win tonight. We're fine. You guys brought it up earlier. You've got Fromber in Game 5. Now, he hasn't been great in the postseason, but he's still your best pitcher. The guy he's going up against in Game 5, Chris Sale, has not been great in any postseason. So you feel like on paper you would have a shot in that matchup. But, yeah, it feels like you've got to find a way to get it done tonight.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about during the show, too, the momentum is such a fickle thing, right? Like, after game one, the way they did what they did, people forgot about the fact that they were in a very precarious position for most of that game, found a way to win. Now suddenly momentum's on the Astros side. Well, then they get steamrolled in game two, and everybody's like, oh, now we got a series, but you're still okay. Mm-hmm. Now you get hammered again in game three, and suddenly the world is over.
I've got this axiom for postseason sports that involve series, so baseball, NBA, NHL. This is just how fans are. When your team wins a game, you think you're never going to lose again. And when your team loses a game, you think you're never going to win again. So as bad as last night's was, it counts the same as losing 4-3 or 12-11. It was bad. There's no doubt about it. But it's a new day. Bounce back. Figure it out. That's what they're preaching in the locker room. That's how you have to act as a fan base still.
What's going on with your hat?
It's a custom hat. I made it myself. So it's a UT football all gas, no brakes hat. That's the saying for Steve Sarkisian. But because the last 2 weeks Texas has only had gas for half the game and brakes for half the game, it's now a half gas, half brakes hat. Because that's how football has played the last couple
of
weeks.
You like Grinky on the Hill tonight?
I do. I mean, I don't know if I should.
Jeremy will say for how long.
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, my over-under is 3.
Yeah, that... I think that's too high.
Like, okay, so you take the low there.
I think he'll get to 3, but like, I think if Vegas were to put out an over-under just based on what we've seen from Greinke and also based on what these starters have given you over the first 3 games of the series, I think a Vegas over-under would be like 2, 2.5. But I do think he'll give you 3, maybe get into the 4th inning.
Yeah, I think he's getting into the 4th.
Okay. Yeah, that's if I had to pick, I would say that too. And then Christian Javier comes in and hopefully he's as dominant as he's been so far.
See, my map, and it might be an optimistic map to be honest with you, is Greinke for 3, Javier for 3, Graveman and Presley for 3. They combine for the 3 innings.
It's not bad either.
You bring Graveman in for the 7th and then ride him however long you ride him. If it's 2 innings, that's great. You bring Presley in for the 9th. If you need Presley in the 8th, you bring Presley in the 8th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's part of the reason why yesterday hurt so much, right? Because you knew this was going to be a bullpen game and you had to use 6 pitchers. And for me, I had 2 goals going into game 3. Win the game, obviously. That's right. The number one goal every game. But also make the Sox use Pivetta. And they didn't have to use him. So he's healthy. He's good to go. He's ready to start tonight for them. Meanwhile, you're a little bit shorthanded in the bullpen. But I agree with you, Jeremy. I mean, if you can get that type of blueprint for the Stros tonight, they're in a good spot.
I thought Dusty did a decent job yesterday at not using like his main bullets out of the bullpen. I thought he handled that well.
Pivetta shouldn't scare this lineup, but the way that they keep worried about what they're doing over there instead of just worrying about handling their business at the plate with their at-bats, that's what bothers me the most is that their focus has shifted to where it shouldn't be. Don't worry about the Red Sox and what they're doing. You have the most capable lineup in baseball if you just hit the ball.
Yeah, this vaunted offense needs to vaunt today. Yep. I mean, they have to show up. And look, don't give up a grand slam. That feels like key number one. But this offense, we knew it even at the start of the postseason before McCullers got hurt. They were going to have to carry this team to a World Series. They have to show up, and they have to show up early,
too.
You got to
play defense because that contributed.
Sure.
And then how did they get the grand slams? A lot of walks. And the Red Sox capitalized more than any team this year on walk scoring. You got to limit the walks. Limit the damage that's self-inflicted, and then take your best shot with the guys that, like you said, pitching.
Yeah, early in the game, also, you need your guys early in your lineup to produce. I hope Dusty makes some changes. I don't know if he will.
Top 3 have been
horrible.
What
would you want?
But your top 3 have been horrible. I'd move Kyle Tucker up in the order. I'd consider putting him at 2. I'd consider moving Yuli up as well, and I'd move Bregman down a little bit. Yeah. I really would. I'd move Brantley and Bregman down. I'd move Tucker and Yuli up a little bit.
Yeah, I wouldn't hate it. I wouldn't hate it if he doesn't do anything either. Like, I'm not dying on that hill. I could go both ways on that because the offense hasn't been the reason they lost games 2 and game 3, but you do want that spark. What do you guys have coming up?
What do we have coming up? Todd Kalas is going to join the program at 4:30, so we'll get his thoughts on the last couple of games in this series. We'll preview and set the stage for game 4 tonight. Also talk a little Texans, some of the roster moves that they made yesterday, and Jimbo Fisher to LSU. Any fire to the smoke? We'll debate.
So you do the bosom buddies. You do Charlie yesterday and TK today.
That's it. Okay. Mike Tirico coming on tomorrow.
Who's on whose couch? That's the question.
I don't know. What a room that must have been.
I'm not sure it's appropriate to call
them
bosom
buddies. And then you throw Tirico in there.
Yeah, what is a bosom buddy?
It depends on the couch.
Okay. Does it?
And the day of the week. Mm.
Does it depend
on the
couch?
And the day of the week. If it's a Friday night.
I'm not buying any couches from Joel.
You get the bosom buddy on the couch.
I'm having a hard time figuring out why it depends on the couch.
Because you don't think the way we think, Jeremy.
I definitely
because
don't. You're right. I don't.
Overemphasize a married man. BK knows exactly what I'm talking about. If it's a good
I'm
Friday
not sure
night,
he does.
You can have a bosom buddy on the couch.
Right, it's not going to be Charlie or TK.
No, I'm not saying
that. Just for the record. I want that out there.
Not the actual personnel.
He didn't rule out Tirico, though.
Oh, wow.
You're right.
All right. We'll be listening 3-7, the Wheelhouse right here. Thanks to Dell for doing all the hard work. He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. Wheelhouse next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.